Welcome to Let's Talk America. I'm Alan Keyes. And today I have a special privilege. I've had it, I don't know, the last several weeks, I've just been really enjoying myself because we've had an excellent lineup of guests. And every now and again, sprinkled in amongst them, there are people that I know really well and respect a lot and have worked with. And today my guest is Dave Racer. Who, as some of you may or may not remember, he worked with me when I was still involved in campaigning and things like that. He was actually the manager of my campaign back in, am I remembering this correctly? Was that 96? Or yes, that was 96. It was. And over the course of the years, we've developed, a good hearty friendship that's grounded in our common commitment to two things, God and truth, which, oh, they're the same thing when you think about it, but still. And there are different it's the different ways in which God's will appears to us and that we get to think things through, because that is not so much, I think, a gift. See, when people talk about God endowed unalienable rights and somebody says these are gifts from God, I think to myself, well, you know, gifts are things that people give to you, and very often, like them, dislike them, do you can do what you please with them. But and a God endowed unalienable right is not a gift in that sense. It's actually a responsibility. And it's one of those responsibilities that you have to take really seriously, because if you acquit yourself well, according to the provisions of God and his understanding of right and righteousness, then you will live. But if you don't, then you will die the death. And that's pretty permanent, that particular aspect, and the way in which I think a lot of us have been reassured is that we know that God also forgives because he came in the form of Jesus Christ in order to make sure that that door to forgiveness was open if we got our heads back in time and understood the difference between freedom, which is a choice you can make, and unalienable right, which is a choice you ought to make and therefore have to make to stay on the right side of justice. So that word right means right according to God. And I always love the chance to get into that, but I think we are now in the wake of Roe v. Wade, but also in the wake of the fact that we're now headed into an election cycle. I don't know, it could be just that I'm getting older, Dave, but this looks like it is more potentially fraught with either good result and the preservation of America or the death of America than anything we have ever faced, including the Civil War. Because now there's a quiet Civil War going on, but we can't say in this juncture what Lincoln was able to say toward the beginning of the Civil War: both sides pray to the same God. We can't say that. As a matter of fact, they're on one side, it seems as if for all their occasional politically charged efforts to get Christians to believe that they're still showing some respect for the God endowed part, I think it's clear that they've utterly abandoned it in order to embrace Marxist, Leninist, totalitarian, Chinese communist style approach to government that just bats God out of the picture altogether. And I think that that's really disturbing and challenging in the present moment. But it's in a way a bad thing, but a good challenge. Am I making sense?
Yeah, you are, as always. Broad philosophical approach to our daily crisis, it seems like, our ongoing crises here in the United States. How can we still be trying to figure out what kind of people we are? Well, we've been challenged. We've been strongly challenged for decades now over what kind of people we are. And some of us have worked really, really hard to preserve that concept of government that is based on those God-endowed unalienable rights, understanding natural law and the laws of God. In fact, Alan, I'm teaching a new course this year on the Constitution. I've taught the Constitution for years, but I've never just taught a course on the Constitution. And one of my joys this morning was to talk about the common thought, the traditions, the things that made it possible for our founders to do such a great job creating that first document. And of course, flowing out of a common understanding or a common belief in God as the source of rights and delineating enumerated powers and so forth. So this is all very fresh in my mind, having taught it to, as Rush would call them, young minds full of mush, my high school students who are staring at me like, what? Is this what we signed up for? Yeah, that's what you signed up for when you get a 75-year-old who loves original intent and all of that stuff and loves God. So that's really right on my mind, and even some of the fractures that were evident at the founding between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists and these different factions, and you still see today so much of that evidence of those factions, except there was this common belief in God at the beginning. It's like you say, Lincoln says, well, we both pray to the same God. Well, no. We pray to the God of the Bible. I don't know what God they're praying to on the other side anymore.
Well, I'm not sure myself that they're praying to God because they have walked down a road in which the implication is that they're listening to that satanic promise that was made to Eve, and ye shall be as gods. And I sense a lot of that spirit, by the way, coming out of the meeting that these people are having in Davos, because it's based on the assumption that it is not God who has made us, we have made ourselves, right? That's exactly the reverse of what we're told in the Bible. It is you that have made us, not we ourselves, is the statement. But no, now we're thinking just the opposite, partly pushed, I think, into hubris by the progress we've made in understanding some things about the laws of nature and of nature's God, but looking at it as if there is no God. So it's just a matter of how smart we are and how much we can read out of things and into things. And in the political context, that's very dangerous. Because though we're partly dealing with things that can be thought through in a rational way and demonstrated the way a scientific proof can be demonstrated, on the other hand, we're also dealing with things that are not susceptible easily to that kind of reasoning, even though we're still trying to come to a rational conclusions. The things that we are trying to see in a rational way are things that involve aspects of our human character and aspects of our feelings and aspects of our sense spiritually and morally, but also aspects of our sense of pride and ambition. And these are things that I think are significantly out of balance these days, particularly amongst our elites. And I'm wondering and every time this Davos things occur, because nothing good comes of it, and I think what we've been in the midst of for the last 2 years is actually an ongoing attack against the people of the United States meant to intimidate, terrorize, and unfit us for the continuation of self-government as we have known it.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here thinking about how at that level, even when I was involved with your campaign, at that level of presidential politics, I came to this conclusion that not much happens by accident, that other than, unforeseen crises that come up, but the strategies and tactics that are used in politics at that level are so systematized and you're trying to control all sorts of things that are really pretty uncontrollable. But how true is that even at World Economic Forum, where they come up with these comprehensive plans as if, seven people got together and just thought of this stuff, but it's been on the books and cooking for a long, long, long time. I've always got a chuckle out of how you interpret the word conspiracy, because conspiracy is it's a strategy. It's what it is. It's a plan, a strategy. And if you want to call World Economic Forum a conspiracy of power, I think that's pretty accurate. And what would they be doing but trying to empower the elites that they think are better at us than ourselves? So when I've been reading, this is not really a sashay away from that, but when I've been reading this material to prepare to teach, I've been intrigued by the difference between those who would think pure reason, logic, and science is enough to drive us without guidance of God or our moral aspects, and what trouble we get into. But in the modern era, what is science? I mean, science has become another form of faith that denies God and simply rearranges things the way that man thinks they are, and then tries to impose that on others. And I think there's all kinds of examples of that, and Davos is one of them, with their grandiose plans and how to organize people. What are they really up to, Alan?
Well, I think they're up to reversing. In other words, when Tocqueville was writing about the United States, he recognized that the country represented what would have been understood at that time as kind of the end of an epoch and the introduction of something that was really new. And I think we've grown, how can I put it, our sense of that newness, of that novelty in the course of the background of human history and of its relationship to the understanding of our humanity that is in the basic tenets of Christianity, right? And I think our people have been invited to turn away from that. And the question in my mind always is, okay, we turn away from that, what have we got left? What we've got left is the prideful assertiveness of an elite class that actually, for all it's still going through the motions of respecting the people at large, they actually reject the fundamental premise of that respect, which is that we are all created equal. Since they think that that creation is a matter of what is going on at the moment, and they certainly don't think that all the folks out there are equal to them. No, they are offering something that's vastly superior. So they can't possibly really believe in the tenets of American government anymore. And that's why I think that they play with them and they pay lip service to them. But when it comes down to the crunch, all too many of them have in fact discarded the fundamental premise, which should empower us to use the sovereign power of the people with some intelligent discretion that acknowledges that our way of understanding the world has to be rooted in a way that comes from a kind of being that actually understands why things are the way they are, that doesn't explain them after the fact using and relying on scientific observation, but that knows, because those things are the way they are on account of the very being that is making the judgments. You see what I'm saying? That's who God is. God isn't the one who figures out how things work. God is the one who has determined the way they work and therefore understands it fully.
So I'm thinking of the pigs in Animal Farm. You know, some of us, we're all equal, except some are more equal than others in how they've taken this to an extreme. And again, we're talking about the so-called world leaders that are gathering at World Economic Forum, even as we speak. But I think that there's an arrogance and audaciousness there. What was the name of Obama's book? this audaciousness that they are so wise and prudent and able to direct us, that is for our own good, you know. I mean, after all, it's they want to give us equality. They're the ones that are able to give it and guarantee it. The ones that they allow to live, that is.
But that's my question, though, because I think that though the United States is premised on a notion of equality, it is not an equality that can be understood in material terms.
No.
It's an equality that is, in fact, kind of a morally, it can be clear, but it's also an abstraction, right? Because in point of fact, you are talking about our equal obligation to do what is right according to the endowment of God. I always find that when I read the Declaration, if you understand it in terms of the actual words that are used, you'll get a clear sense, because it's as if we look at, we understand ourselves to be in a situation where the choices that we have available and the power we have, whether it's through intelligence or other means, to make those choices and pursue them in a way that can, in fact, affect and change the world, we know that that's not an equality, except in terms of our responsibility, right? To understand and follow the laws that account for the existence of the world that presents us and in which we can enjoy the opportunity of choosing. But in light of that responsibility, what we are really being offered is not a free gift. It is a great opportunity, but it's not a free gift, because the gift is contingent on doing right according to the will of God. And that gives us, how can I put it, a sounder context in which to judge what is required of us and what the limits are of our own ability to, how can I put it, make ourselves into anything we wish. And if I can put it this way, the whole LGBTQ movement and everything it entails, when you look at it from a biblical point of view, is actually an assertion that we can make ourselves, and that whatever we fancy ourselves to be is what we are. And I think that's a lie from hell, as it's portrayed in the Bible. The notion that we shall be as gods is a lie that comes from the mouth of Satan in order to distract us and get us into all the trouble that is still ongoing. We're not doing very well with the aftermath of the fall. But if we don't neglect the help we've gotten along the way and use it, we still know what we ought to do. And I wonder, though, if though we're a nation premised on that knowledge, the knowledge of our responsibility to God, right, to act according to God's understanding of what is right, to according to God's righteousness. And it led us from strength to strength. Victory after victory has been achieved, including over an evil, the slavery, that people thought it would be impossible for our union, for the nation to survive as a whole, if we dealt with that. And we did. We more than did. And I think that put us in a position to be very helpful to the world in the 20th century. But that's not being thought through or taught or led from the point of view of our politicians anymore.
Some of us thought that we were exercising our moral imperative by engaging in the political process in more earnest, actually ever increasing earnest since the Roe v. Wade decision. And bringing in, and I remember, I was there, I've been there for a lot of things, I'm aging, when the Republican Party was taken over by the so-called Christian right, and how it was fueled by many who came in from the Democrat Party, but they were first and foremost pro-life people, feeling that they could use the political process in order to turn the tide. Well, and we've exercised in that arena, you and I, for decades now, and we thought we had won a clear victory last summer with the Dobbs v. Jackson decision, and I think we did win a clear victory, a political victory. But what was missing all along that way, and certainly in the general public, was that moral understanding of the value of human life. And how that was what we were fighting for. We weren't fighting for political power, but in order to get what we wanted, we had to exercise political power. And once we got it, we kind of stood back and said, oh, wait a minute, what did we just do? If you read the Dobbs decision, I've just taught on that. I'm hoping to do a national teaching on it soon. You see that it was left to, and it sounds very much like the Ninth and Tenth Amendments, to the people and their elected representatives in debate to decide what this means now. And correctly, it wasn't in the Constitution to begin with. We knew that. They knew that even.
Well, see, but I don't know that. And I've never acknowledged it because I think it's a very simple question, which they're disingenuously trying to pretend was ever anything but clear. Yeah. What is the being in the womb? Is it a wolf? Is it a monkey? Is it a dog?
Human.
Is it a flowering plant? Is it a giant sequoia? No, it's a human being. That being in the womb is a human being.
Right.
And once you have done that, what part of no person shall be deprived? And the word person, the first element of the definition of a word person is not something complicated. The first three words in Webster's dictionary, which would have been familiar to the founders and which is still familiar to us, is that a person is a human being, right? And that was the question all along. It's acknowledged in the Roe v. Wade decision that it was acknowledged there that if that child is a person, then there's no doubt about what the answer has to be. And there is now no doubt that what is in the womb is not just a mass of cells without identity. It is from the moment of conception.
Yeah.
What our science now clearly recognizes to be a human being, not some other kind of being. How can we miss that and not recognize that our Constitution explicitly says that you need a due process of law? So you'd have to put that child on trial and try to convince the world that that child was guilty of some wrongdoing before the mother. And they try to use privacy in this decision. I think it was in South Carolina or somewhere. They're trying to strike down the law that bans abortion. Mm-hmm. And they're trying again to act as if
sure.
it can be done because it's just a matter between the woman and her doctor. No, it's not. That's a human being. And we as a people have an understanding of what it means to be human that is bedrock and clear in our declaration. That's why there was a civil war. Because on the one hand, they were trying to embrace that premise. And on the other, they were trying to act as if people they knew from history to be human, because they had a sense of that history that went back to ancient times. And they knew that it was Black folks, white folks, Semitic folks, all kinds of folks that went into the polyglot brew of humanity. That was always disingenuous, and now we know it's disingenuous. Our science says so. So I think that the notion that there's no constitutional basis for protecting the life of the child from the moment of conception is plainly false, because otherwise we'd have to say that's not a human being in the womb. And if it's not a human being in the womb, then it's not a human being outside the womb unless everybody agrees to it, which then puts us in what? A situation where you get enough power and you get enough support, you can go kill any group or individual you please, so long as you make the decision in private. Think about that. We'll be right back after this.
Thanks for your support of this platform. Use the code BTV at checkout for additional savings. BrightEonStore.com.
I feel that Juvench is helping me to get better every day in every way.
That impact is what has been shown to help improve your bone density. Without that impact, you're missing a very important nutrient in your physical conditioning program.
The Juvent Micro Impact System allows the person to create more joint range of motion. Now I know there's a chance that nourishment can take place to that joint.
Get one of these.
Welcome back. I'm Alan Keyes. This is Let's Talk America. And today, my friend Dave Racer is on, and we are talking about some fundamental things. And I think one thing we're talking about is what was known from the beginning to be the determining factor, the thing that would make the difference between the success of America and the failure of America. And I think that that is expressed in the way that the Declaration of Independence and then the Constitution require that we respect the responsibility of human beings to care for God's understanding and conception of what human life is all about. And I think that it's quite clear, because some people do now have a clear understanding that right does not mean freedom. It means the obligation, in fact, the unalienable, inescapable, that is, obligation to do something according to a standard. And what's clear in the Declaration is that that is the standard of God. But I think we're now in an era when that is under severe challenge. And I wonder whether, though they pretend otherwise, even the concept of common humanity can survive, given what these people are telling us we have the power to do. So the people come forward, and though their body clearly, according to nature, says, woman, you have what's-her-name going up during her hearing and trying to pretend that she hadn't the faintest idea, Ketanji Brown or Jackson. She hadn't the faintest idea what a woman was. I don't know. I really don't know. That was so stupid at one level, but also so telling.
It has such practical implications. It's amazing. There's a debate right now in the Minnesota legislature. There was testimony yesterday about putting menstrual products in boys' restrooms. How absurd is this? We're going to put them in there because, well, boys also menstruate. Where? Come on. I mean, it's audacious, Alan. Back to Dobbs saying that the clear words in Dobbs is there is no constitutional right to abortion in the Constitution.
Right.
It does not say, and this was another slide in my presentation, that there is an innate moral right to life and that humans are human life. The preborn, just conceived babies are human, and therefore, you said, there would be protection in the original, because there's no enumerated power for the federal government to engage to take away the human life of a human.
Or by the way, it goes further, because there's no warrant in the Constitution for the government of the United States to tolerate the murder of human beings.
Yes, right.
And I think that that was part of what fed the sense that the Civil War was an inevitable thing that had to come. Because the implication of the slave practice was that at the end of the day, the slave did not enjoy a status in life that could escape the death-dealing dissatisfaction of the masters. And so there was a sense in which we are not all created equal in respect of the basic God-endowed right to life. Now, we've totally cleared that up, thank God, in the course of my lifetime. I think it's been plainly cleared up. And yet, when I read Dobbs, it was my disappointment that they pretended that it was still unclear. That debt we owe to God, really, because it's a responsibility from Him, to respect all other humanity. And I think we're now, and that court decision in Dobbs is trying to pretend that somehow or another we haven't resolved that issue with respect to the most obvious human life. And actually, from the point of view of the race as a whole, the human race, it's the most important of the assertions of human life. Because otherwise, how do we assuredly procreate?
Well, exactly. How did we create our governments if we didn't have the reality that human life is human life, and that we have a creative ability and the ability to come together and the need to come together under order and so forth, all of which is very natural. And it's how do we order things? I mean, the miracle of the United States. And you said something earlier, it's kind of tweaked my ear, that those of us who have lived, and I might even say younger generations who have lived a shorter time under the current misunderstandings, if you will, of what that Constitution says, don't know any different because they haven't studied it. They don't understand those basic ideas. Even people of faith, they don't understand the ramifications of that in terms of our governance. But we do convert it. This is where I was going to raw politics. And so what happens in after Dobbs, the Democratic Party across the country spent over $400 million promoting a lie. The lie was that Republicans who believed in life were extremists, that they were taking away your liberty. That was one of the words, and your medical freedom. None of that was true, but when you say it over, it's gaslighting. What is advertising but gaslighting? Over and over and over, you end up with, instead of, well, maybe the red wave was a red herring also, but you end up with a much smaller change. And in Minnesota, Alan, it made such a huge difference because our Senate is 34 Democrats, 33 Republicans now, one vote margin, and only six votes in the House. And it's a Democrat legislature. So what do you think the very first bill in the Minnesota House and the Minnesota Senate does? It ensconces, it encodes the right to abortion in our statutes. And it claims that we have a judicial decision called Doe v. Gomez, 1995. I was on the talk radio when this was going on. Never forget this debate. Where our chief attorney general stipulated that there was a right to abortion in the Minnesota Constitution, and the Supreme Court in the state of Minnesota accepts that argument instead of putting on their brains and thinking it through and seeing that that certainly isn't true. It's not there. It's not there any more than it was in the U.S. Constitution.
I'm curious, when the discussion about this is going on, though, Is it that hard for people to see that human life is human life? And if you warrant the taking of the most helpless, innocent form of human life, right? That is present, by the way, in that moment, generally speaking, with the cooperation of the human body, the natural law, if not always the will of the parties involved. But that will of the parties involved was never necessary to establishing the premise that human life has to be respected, because that's part of the laws of nature and of nature's God, right, whereby we as a people acquire our authority to govern ourselves. Don't people realize that two things are true? You are actually saying that this form of murder is okay so long as enough people agree on it. And I'm saying to myself, well, lo, where have I heard that before? Oh, that was basically the argument that was made by John C. Calhoun and the Southerners. Mm-hmm. This form of atrocity against human life is okay because we've agreed on it. And they didn't acknowledge that that statement, that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or process or property without due process, once you see that human life is definitely included in that list, right? It's at the very beginning. Oh, yes, Alan. It's at the very beginning. That you're violating a premise that is not just a premise of state government's constitutions. It is the premise of our common government and our authority that we exercise in that common government. How come they're not seeing this? This has been my bugaboo since I first started really articulating or trying to articulate what's wrong from an American point of view with the whole abortion thing. It can't be done and let the notion that every human life in this country, innocent human life, is protected under our Constitution. But it has to be. Otherwise, I think you're basically saying get enough people to agree and we can kill whoever we want to kill. Mm-hmm. And when you can kill whoever you want to kill, no matter how innocent they are, you have a power of intimidation that could get them to work for you for as long as you force them to. Isn't that slavery? And don't the Democrats pretend they're against that? Though the party wasn't really, but they do pretend.
Now I'm going into deep thoughts today with you again. Here, I'm thinking, how could we get to that place where we would not recognize that our very freedoms and liberties and order, you know, the order of government is all based on the fact that God created us, and God gave us rights and all of that, except if we declare ourselves God. Yeah. If I am God, I'm not picking on a woman here, but if I'm God, then I have the right to control life. It's my choice. I'm God. I can make that decision, and I can rewrite the Ten Commandments to be something else. What's this about, murder? Well, that's not murder. Murder means taking a human life, and I've decided this isn't human life. This is something else. And so I'm going to ignore it. Well, now you're going beyond, because here's where the breakdown is of our civil society, our civil order, and our understanding of self-governance. And boy, I've been on this quest. Our government is fit only for a moral and religious people. What does that mean? And what does it mean today? Well, if we're all little gods and we're all making up our own minds, about who can live and who cannot live, holy smokes. I mean, then you get a lot more than abortion. You get violence in the streets, you get disregard for contract law, you get disregard for law. It's lawlessness. And Satan is the author of lawlessness.
Well, let me try to introduce one element that's been much on my mind in recent days, because I think it's what's really at work. We went through the whole COVID crisis. There have been various reactions to it, but one of them was the reaction of the governments and agencies and people all the way up to the president, who basically said, well, this is such an emergency that we're going to strip you of all your rights. You're going to stay where we tell you to stay, and you're going to stay there as long as we tell you to stay there, and you're going to wear what we tell you to wear, and so forth and so on, all of which would have been deeply contrary to the sense of American liberty. Much less fundamental liberty. But they kind of got away with it. Yeah. And I think one of the things that intrigues me is that now the fundamental difference between the two parties is that the Democrats now pretty well openly declare that getting away with it, that translation of power into the hands of the national government, is going to be the norm from here on out. And that whatever they have to do to get us there, they're going to do it. And I say it's exemplified by this effort to sneak past us in the form of some kind of recognition of power in the WHO. Statement that basically says they can make us subservient to foreign powers who then operate according to an understanding diametrically opposed to the ground of our sovereignty as a people. And that really is setting us up to be overthrown. And I think they're pushing that in Davos and everywhere else because that's where they want us to be. You think most Americans recognize that we've been so distracted by all this talk of freedom that we forget that only if we acquit our responsibility to do right according to God, do we enjoy the sovereign power that is the first of the enumerated rights.
I'm thinking of practical expressions of this, what's going on now with, I think, a tremendous pushback against the whole concept of mandatory vaccinations. I think we've gotten beyond that. And in the broad general public, I know that there's still employers who are requiring this. I helped a fellow write a medical exemption for his daughter, who's getting hired by a big healthcare conglomerate. A faith-based medical exemption, anyway, requirement. So they're still pushing this mandatory vaccination thing, but there is a significant pushback. And I don't think that it's principled, you know, based on ideas of liberty and good science and all of that. I think it's that American people don't like being told what to do. But it seems like that also is subject to erosion over time. Boy, how many times have you and I have been on, and I keep talking about the day you said we woke up one day and we all had masks on, and how did that happen? And the tremendous amount of fear of individuals, and if you will, deferring to the experts. Who are the experts? So we know Fauci very, very well now, but there's experts in Davos as well, experts on the climate. You know, what's this whole thing about gas stoves? I mean, that's so audacious to even have that debate. But for me, it's like tenderizing the mind, you know. Now we're, oh, golly, I never thought about that.
Well, see, I have to say, though, that some of this seems to me to be something where you can talk about it issue by issue, but it's sort of imperative, though, that we remember, and most Americans don't even realize this, we're now engaged in a war for the survival of the United States of America.
Oh, yes.
And there's a group that wants to plunge this country into chaos. That's why they are doing ridiculous things. Who ever heard of an unpoliced open border contributing to peace and prosperity in a country? It's absurd. Who ever heard of the notion that if we don't enforce the criminal laws and we allow people to go in and steal stuff and walk away with it, and we let them know that there's not going to be any prosecutions anymore for things like that, and that if you go in and rob the store but you don't kill anybody, we're not going to come after you, and so forth and so on. This is insane. This is intended to both weaken and introduce an element of uncontrollable chaos into American society. So is the whole notion that we have to be subservient, not to the laws of nature and of nature's God, but to the whims of human beings about who they are and what they are, even though what they say violates reasonable scientific understanding of what humanity is, what life is in the human form, and so forth and so on. That's chaos. I think we have people who are trying to gaslight us, basically, to drive us crazy and encourage us to do things that accept craziness, which they know in the end will lead to a total collapse of order in our society.
Well, that comes to the place where we reach out and say, someone please save us. You know, and the scripture talks about that in Revelation, that day will come. But here, this, I always go back to these kind of practical demonstrations of how insane we are. A young lady testifying, a new immigrant in an election reform committee yesterday, saying, and I don't want to get her wrong, but essentially she said, we're new people here, and we're not even citizens, and we could see this is wrong, and if you don't do what we're going to do, she says, we're going to vote you out. Wait a minute. What do you mean you're going to vote us out? Hold on just a second. There is this requirement. And so we're here rewriting election laws again, by the way, with one party rule, but that's another whole issue. But we weaken our voting laws. We make it, I thought it would be wise to have a lot of people vote, but I want people to vote who know what they're voting for and have some understanding of it, not just numbers, you know. And you talk about the border. When you were talking, I was thinking about the great debates or discussions in the 80s and 90s about, and I think they called it Mazatlan, was reestablishing the nation of Mexico, taking California and the western part of the country. Well, I don't know that this is a this crossing the border is Mexican driven for that purpose, but holy smokes, it's like we're just saying, okay, come on in, take it over.
Well, I think that if you look at it from the Davos point of view, it is driven for a purpose. And that purpose, what's the word that used to be used a lot because of, was it the Second or First World War? Balkanization.
Balkanization, there you go.
They want to reduce America to several things. One, divide us according to region, states, whatever, so that we no longer have a common ground of what the territory is. But also, I think a lot of what is going on with immigration and so forth is so that we no longer have an understanding of who we are as a people.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's partly why they have, they still talk about the Constitution when it serves their immediate aim of trying to say they have powers they don't have or do things that are contrary to the fundamental premises of the society. But apart from that, they have no use for the Constitution whatsoever. And on the left, they only talk about power, and then they talk feelingly about what they pretend they would do with the power, even though it's never been done by communists once they got into control. What they mostly do when they get into the control is wield ruthless power ruthlessly. And I think that our Americans not realizing that part of what is happening is aimed at producing a chaotic dissolution of our form of government and our way of life. They want actually to get us involved, if they can, in some kind of war of all against all, so that there is fighting going on in the streets and towns of every city in America, and on a basis that then divides us along lines of race and passionate rejection of the laws of nature, so that we cannot recover our common ground, which is what we were offering. In other words, America was founded on an inescapable premise of common humanity, which we're now being encouraged to abandon.
So we're also being encouraged now, again, in a very strong way, to get rid of our AR-15s and our magazines, because after all, you don't use those to hunt. Actually, some people do use those to hunt, but as you know and I know, that is not the point. The point is that we are armed and we are able to protect ourselves, and many of us do understand the purpose of the Second Amendment, way beyond being able to hunt for food, which I've never done in my life, by the way. But I do want to protect myself and my way of life. And are we back on the, let's take the guns away? Well, they've been talking about that for a long time. So far, we've been able to push back on that.
Interesting take, though, Dave. At the moment, I've been reading with increasing apprehension. It's partly for me because over the last several years, I've been trying to follow the machinations of the Chinese communists, of Putin, and all of these people.
Sure.
And I can't help but notice, by the way, that though some people are trying to act as if there's some tension between China and Russia, China has, by and large, not lifted a finger or said a nasty word about Russia's invasion of the Ukraine. I think that's very telling. And in the process of our reaction to that invasion, which I partly do not understand, but we can go into that some other time, we have been, the game no longer seems to be just to part American citizens from their weapons. We are actually shipping a lot of our military equipment overseas until it has now become an openly confessed crisis that we're starting to approach that point where we won't have what's needed to make sure we have a military to defend this country capable.
And our oil. And our
And this, again, gets me back to the thing that I think Americans now need to take the next step and wake up and realize this is not a war of all against all Americans. That's what they want us to think. They want us to be fascinated with all these differences and fighting over these differences and so forth and so on. But I think that the ultimate aim is to turn this country into such a chaotic mess that we are no longer formidable enough even to defend ourselves. At which point, by the way, we'll probably get an inkling of why it is that Chinese haven't been taking much notice of what's going on in the Ukraine, because they are led by somebody, I think, who sees launching war when it's going to be getting you what you want to be an inevitable part of the business. And now that they have nuclear weapons all developed, which they didn't do after the Second World War and et cetera, we're dealing with people who will do whatever they have to do in order to get their hands on whatever territory they covet. And with overpopulation now still a worry in the minds of the Chinese government, I think they look at America. Do we really think people don't look at a whole continent practically that we have occupied and say, what right did they have to take that whole place over? Let's go get some. I think it's kind of sad.
I think it's sad we're out of time.
Oh, I see, my clock has disappeared and I'm not seeing it. But it's always a pleasure, and I hope you'll come back and join us soon. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.